Picture a 91-year-old man boarding a plane to Kenya, his weathered hands clutching research notes about a new wheat disease threatening to undo his life's work. Most people his age would be content with accolades and retirement. Norman Borlaug was heading back to the field. This wasn't unusual. Throughout his career, Borlaug chose muddy boots over laboratory coats, choosing to work alongside farmers rather than lecture from podiums. His approach was simple but radical. If you want to end hunger, you don't theorize about it from comfortable offices. You get your hands dirty. By the time he died in 2009, Borlaug had saved more human lives than anyone in history, an estimated 1 billion people. Yet if you asked random people on the street who he was, most would draw a blank. How does the man who prevented the greatest famine in human history remain virtually unknown? Perhaps because his revolution happened not through war or politics, but through something far more fundamental: wheat. Norman Borlaug never intended to save the world. Born in 1914 on a small Iowa farm, he grew up in a Norwegian-American community where hard work wasn't just valued, it was survival. His grandfather Nels would take young Norman fishing and share wisdom in broken English. "Norm boy, your good deeds will be returned in ways you can never imagine." These weren't empty platitudes. When the Great Depression hit during Norman's teenage years, he watched banks fail, neighbors lose everything, and bread lines form in cities. These images seared themselves into his consciousness. Education seemed like a distant dream. Norman had saved just $70 when he left for the University of Minnesota, initially failing the entrance exam. He lived in a boarding house for a dollar a week, washing dishes for meals at the university coffee shop. It was there he met Margaret Gibson, who would become his wife and lifelong anchor. When budget cuts eliminated his expected forestry job, Norman felt devastated. But Dr. E.C. Stackman, a plant pathology professor, saw something in this determined farm boy. He convinced Norman to pivot from studying trees to studying crops. That pivot would change history. Sometimes our greatest contributions come not from our carefully laid plans, but from the detours that force us to reconsider everything. In 1944, Norman accepted an unusual proposition: move to Mexico to double their wheat production. The country imported half its wheat, and rural poverty was devastating. Despite having a secure DuPont job, wartime draft protection, and a newborn son with severe health problems, Margaret encouraged him to go. Mexican farmers harvested 10 to 20 bushels per acre using centuries-old methods, while rust disease turned golden fields black overnight. Most scientists would have proceeded methodically. Borlaug went manic. While typical breeders made dozens of crosses, he made thousands, 6,000 by 1952, using surgical tweezers for delicate hand pollination. His most controversial move was shuttle breeding. Traditional wisdom demanded breeding crops in their final growing location. Borlaug defied this, growing two generations yearly: summer crops in cool highlands near Mexico City, winter crops in the scorching Yaqui Valley 2,000 kilometers north. Plants surviving both extremes developed broad adaptability. They could grow almost anywhere. This accident proved crucial when Mexican wheat later spread worldwide. By the early 1950s, Borlaug had solved the rust problem, but fertilized traditional wheat grew tall and toppled before harvest. After searching 20,000 varieties, he crossed Japanese dwarf wheat with his rust-resistant Mexican lines, creating short, stiff-stemmed wheat that produced more grain per plant and never fell over. Released in 1961, these varieties doubled Mexico's wheat yields within 7 years, producing 9,000 kilos per hectare, yields previously thought impossible. By 1956, Mexico achieved food self-sufficiency for the first time in modern history. Borlaug established training programs and created international spring wheat yield nurseries, sending seeds to 150 locations worldwide. When guards with shotguns protected Mexican wheat plots in India and Pakistan from seed thieves, Borlaug knew he'd succeeded. Farmers don't steal what doesn't work. By the mid-1960s, catastrophe seemed inevitable. India received 5 million tons of emergency wheat annually from the United States, the largest food rescue in history. Yet famine worsened. Paul Ehrlich declared India would never feed itself. The Paddock brothers wrote off entire countries as beyond saving. These weren't fringe predictions. They came from respected mainstream experts. Into this despair came Borlaug's Mexican wheat. India's minister C. Subramaniam gambled on 18,000 tons of seed. Pakistan, learning of India's purchase, scrambled to buy 42,000 tons. But seed alone wouldn't work. At a strategic luncheon with Indian officials and press, Borlaug boldly declared India needed fertilizer, 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 credit, 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 and fair prices, fair prices, fair prices. When Deputy Prime Minister Mehta bristled at this foreigner's audacity, Borlaug warned that without policy changes supporting farmers, social disorder would follow. Within 2 weeks, India announced dramatic policy changes. Pakistan followed suit. By 1968, euphoric wheat fever swept both countries. The 1974 harvest brought both nations to self-sufficiency, proving the doomsayers spectacularly wrong. When Margaret Borlaug received calls from Oslo in October 1970 announcing Norman's Nobel Peace Prize, she thought it was a prank. Norman, working at an agricultural station, responded with disbelief, "No, no, that can't be, Margaret. Someone's pulling your leg." The Nobel Committee honored him for helping provide bread for a hungry world, turning pessimism into optimism in the dramatic race between population explosion and food production. In his acceptance speech, Borlaug declared, "If you desire peace, cultivate justice, but at the same time, cultivate the fields to produce more bread. Otherwise, there will be no peace." Recognizing agriculture lacked a Nobel Prize, Borlaug sought sponsors to establish a World Food Prize. After general food support ended, Iowa trucking magnate John Ruin immediately grasped the vision and created the World Food Prize Foundation with a $10 million endowment. The prize, now worth $250,000, is awarded annually in Des Moines for exceptional achievement in food security, honoring work in plant breeding, pest management, microcredit, policy, and aquaculture. Borlaug's legacy wasn't just feeding people, it was creating systems to ensure others could continue the work. Borlaug's later work extended to China and Africa. After Nixon's 1972 visit opened China, Borlaug joined scientific exchanges, spotting an old University of Minnesota classmate among the Chinese delegation. They exchanged only a subtle wink given the Cultural Revolution's climate. Unlike Soviet scientists who suffered under Lysenko's pseudoscience, China's researchers trained freely at CIMMYT. Pakistan supplied China with Mexican wheat in 1966, and by 1970, China purchased 5,000 tons of Borlaug seed. Today, with just 7% of the world's arable land, China feeds 22% of the world's population. Africa proved harder. When Japanese philanthropist Ryoichi Sasakawa asked why there had been no green revolution in Africa, Borlaug protested he was too old and knew nothing about Africa. The 13 years older Sasakawa insisted they start immediately. Beginning in Ghana and Sudan in 1986, the Sasakawa Global 2000 program expanded to 15 countries, achieving yields 2 to 3 times national averages despite minimal irrigation, droughts, poor infrastructure, and chronic underinvestment. The program introduced quality protein maize with twice the essential amino acids. In Ghana, a variety named Obatampa, good nursing mother, became widely adopted for nutritious baby porridge. Nearing 90, Borlaug believed Earth could feed 10 billion through continuous research and rural development. Brazil's Cerrado region proved his point. New technologies transformed 500 million acres of acid soil savanna into productive farmland, making Brazil the world's second largest soybean producer while reducing Amazon deforestation. Similar potential exists across sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia, but 70 to 80% of future food needs must come from higher yields, not expanded cultivation. Borlaug dismissed genetic modification fears as ideologically inspired pseudoscience. Humans have modified crops for 10,000 years. Modern biotechnology just does it more precisely. When opponents suggested organic farming could feed the world, Borlaug did the math. Replacing today's 70 million metric tons of chemical nitrogen would require 4.7 billion tons of manure and tripling livestock. The land needed to feed those animals would be better used to grow food for hungry people. His message was clear. Responsible biotechnology is not the enemy. Starvation is. When the virulent U99 rust strain emerged in Uganda in 1999, the 91-year-old developed a plan for international rust nurseries and committed personal funds to fight it. Borlaug didn't invent flashy technology or build a billion-dollar company. He spent decades in muddy fields, crossing wheat by hand, fighting bureaucrats, training scientists, refusing to accept that hunger was inevitable. When he died in 2009, most people still didn't know his name, but a billion people were alive because of him. The greatest gift isn't being remembered, it's making hunger forgettable.